Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everybody, and mahalo. This is Professor Gary Lee in your home again on a Tuesday evening. Always excited to do this. I appreciate you allowing us to do that. We are the AMAA, Masters and Pioneers Radio Network. And we've been on the air now for 3 years, award-winning. A few awards that we've gotten for this radio show. And big shout-out to my co-host, Auntie Jesse Bowen, who's also the producer of the show. Karen Eden Herdman, Minister Pastor Bowen, Mr. Bowen's lovely wife, and our special guests who are always on the show. We work really hard to put this network together for you. And my show, or Parts Unknown, is the interview show that we interview some of the top masters and legends of the martial arts. And we also give you news and different things that's going around the country throughout the year. My name is Professor Gary Lee. As I said, if you're a new listener, we talk about sport karate. We talk about sport karate from the past. We talk about the present and also the future. And we have some incredible times on this show. Thank you for, again, allowing us to come in here. We have a special show tonight. Lots of announcements, lots of new things going on. But the night show, I get to go back and talk about history, which you guys know me. I love to do that. I've got a very special guest on tonight. It goes back to one of the original associations, the karate associations in America, the United States Karate Association. He, his instructor, was one of the first five founding members with Robert Trias, Mr. Robert Bowles. So my special guest tonight is Mr. Daniel Gossett, and I'll be bringing him on in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking about some really cool history of USKA and how other sport karate associations kind of copycatted those guys who put together the USK, and we'll be talking about some of those people. But, you know, lots of things are going on, and right off the bat, I want to say a big shout-out to Mr. Wade Jenkins, who had heart surgery today, and was very successful. We got word on the social media that he's out and recovering, and we wish him all the best. And I really want him to recover quickly, because he's actually my director this year for the Kevin Funakoshi Traditional Kata Wars Tournament that we're doing. We're separating Kyokushin and Shonryu and Goju-ryu and Echiru and, you know, all these really traditional Japanese and Okinawa karate styles. And we'll be talking about that a little bit later, too. But Wade Jenkins is my director, and I wish him all the best. Quick recovery, and I wish you all the success and recovery. Another big shout-out to one of the original history generals. I don't know about this heart surgery stuff. It's happening again. My dear friend Jimmy Anderson, he went into surgery today, and he came out and was very, very successful. And that's Mr. Jimmy Anderson, one of my original history generals out of Sacramento. By the way, he's called Mr. Sacramento, by the way. And so from all of us that love him, people like Jim Hartley and George Clark and Bob Wall, George Minshew, Jamie Cashin, all the animals, we love you, sir. Brian Hartley, we love you, and we want you to get better, too, real quick. Big shout-out to Jackie, too, for taking care of you. So that's my shout-outs, and that takes care of that, and that's pretty cool. But also, remember, the base of the show is the Sport Karate Museum history of what we did. And, you know, my black belts today called me up. I had three black belts call me. They said, Mr. Lee, we realize you've done 27 Living Legends roast. But do you realize that this year you've been doing this for 20 years? The first Living Legends was in 1999. The reason why it's seven more Living Legends roast than 20 is because of some years we did two in a row. Like this year, we're roasting John Natividad in Las Vegas, November 1st and 2nd. And the Hawaiian roast is going to be here in Houston, September 27th and 28th. So some years we did two in a row. So that's why I kind of got fused. I remember I celebrated the 25th anniversary of the roast, but this year, this is so cool. This is 20 years. So this is a celebration that we'll be doing September the 27th and 28th, celebrating 20 years of putting together friends and family and creating new friends and new families. Also understanding that, you know, we have quite a few events coming up, and I'm going to mention those a little bit later in the show. But one I want to mention before I bring on my special guest tonight is that, you know, the idea behind the radio show also is eventually in the beginning it was Who's Who in Karate. Then it went to Who's Who in the Martial Arts, and now it's Who's Really Who's Who in the Martial Arts. I mean, it's really changed. It's evolved for greatness, I believe, what Mr. Bowen is looking at. And this year, June the 28th and 29th, there will be a new book cover with Stephen Hayes being introduced on it, and five other incredible people will be chosen. But this will be at the New Orleans in Las Vegas. For more information, please contact Hansi Jesse Bowen on Facebook or contact him at whosuinthemartialarts.com. And remember that, you know, it's about you and your story that you told. That's what this event's about. And it's a banquet. It's an awards. And the people who are being put in the book for this year of the 2019 will be recognized. So that's in Las Vegas at the New Orleans. And for more information, please contact Jesse Bowen. So now I'd like to get on with my special guest tonight. I'm kind of like really excited to talk about history. And this man is not only a champion's champion, because he's a competitor's champion, but he competes. And I've asked him and actually gone to have him compete at the Kata Wars event that we do here in Houston. He is a weapons champion, and he's also a kata champion, and he's also a fighter. And you know what's really cool about him? He comes from the lineage of really old karate do here in America. He trained directly with Mr. Robert Bowles. Now, he's out of Texas now, and he trains with Mr. Juan Galvan, better known for creating an incredible man, son. We call him Adrian Galvan, who's going to be representing us in the Olympics or working for the Olympics. So there's a lot of lineage there. So I'd like to bring on Mr. Daniel Gossett. Daniel, are you on the air?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Professor Lee.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you tonight?
Good. I'm just, you know, kind of long-winded there. I got lots to talk about, lots of things to say, and it's fun doing this radio show. I mean, I'm glad you're on it. I'm glad we've introduced ourselves at Oklahoma. And you know what? I thought about that for a few minutes. I'm thinking, here's a guy who's never met me before, and we actually hung out with each other for hours talking.
Yes,
about
we did.
History. It was really incredible. And look at us. Now we're on the air talking to thousands and thousands of people who are listening to us. That's pretty cool. Well, you know, Daniel, and first of all, I always ask permission. May I call you Daniel?
Yes, that's fine.
Thank you, sir. Daniel, tell me a little bit about your history with Mr. Bowles, how you got started, what year did you make black belt, and what city were you in when you did get started?
Okay, before we do that, I want to say a belated happy birthday to Grandmaster Trius. Yesterday was his birthday.
Amen. God bless. Rest in peace. Happy birthday, Master Trius.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about him, too. Absolutely. God bless you.
No, I started with Hachi Bowles 43 years ago in 1973. And he's my instructor, my only instructor. I've been with him all that time. I made black belt in 1999. It doesn't
take a long time. So you haven't bounced around? You haven't bounced around learning Krav Maga and Taekwondo and Kung Fu and Tai Chi and all these other things?
No.
You're not. You just trained in one style and one style only? It's pretty rare. That's very rare. God bless you. And what style was that, Daniel?
That's Okinawan Shuri Ryu.
Us. That's the style of originality of the USKA, the United States Karate Association.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And that's Okinawan, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Now, what makes Shorte different than, say, Shonryu or Goju-ryu or Echi-ryu? Well, Echi-ryu is Japanese. The other Okinawa styles, Goju-ryu, Shonryu, and, because Shonryu has, what, Jushimini, they got Matsusamura, that type of thing. What makes Shorte different?
Well, it's kind of hard to say, because we incorporate a lot of things into our style, but, the katas and everything, Grandmaster Trius wanted to get those back to the original forms that they were, and, I hope he succeeded in them, and, Hachi Balls carries on that tradition, and he is very guarded about our system, so we just don't go out and show it to everybody. We do it in the tournaments and, in class. I've seen a lot of different styles, and, I'm not going to knock different styles or anything, but we're a complete system. We do a little bit of jiu-jitsu, a little bit of judo, and I'm not sure, how, if the other styles incorporate that into their systems or not. We do, and it's a complete system. Let's just put it that way.
Daniel, I was being sarcastic a while ago when I was asking you if you did all those other styles, because I understand what you know me well enough now that I do have that type of sense of humor. I understand the purity, and I respect that so deeply. Let's take my listeners a little bit deeper. A lot of things that people hear on this show that I've done for 3 years, I get emails or a phone call afterwards, and they say, "You made all that up. You've been drinking too many Mai Tais, Professor Lee." it's really fun getting those people on the phone, because I like to talk to them. I don't like to email them back. I like to talk to them and explain to them that those things that we talk about are true. So with that said, take some of my listeners back to how hard was those karate classes back in those days, in the early days of the USK days, and what Mr. Bowles was teaching. Can you walk me through a couple of the things that was really outlandish that today people would probably be lawsuits over? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the drills. Take my listeners back a little bit, just so they understand that
okay.
I'm not making all this stuff up.
Well, here's one that, matter of fact, a few months ago I talked to Hachi about it, and we were kind of reminiscing. He taught us the three levels of punching, and that was stop before you hit the opponent, stop at the opponent, punching to the opponent. Well, we started out by wrapping our knuckles on a bench for 5 minutes. Then we went out on the mat, and he said, "Okay, now you're going to learn how to punch through the opponent." So we worked the heavy bag for 5 minutes. And he goes, "Now you're going to learn how to stop at impact." So we worked the makiwara board for 5 minutes. Then he brought the class down to it was a towel hanging on the wall. And he said, "Now you're going to learn to stop before impact." We took the towel off, and here it was, a makiwara board, no rope, 200 finishing nails, point out. And that's how we learned to stop before impact. The first guy didn't do it, but everybody else just kind of go, "Okay, you're next." "No, I don't want to be next." "No, you do it." "No, you do it." But eventually we all had to do it.
This is a regular dojo workout.
Yeah. And then another time
people were in class watching this class and also doing this class. And people accept this. The people watching this class accept this. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I know that people just don't understand that. Something else too that I picked up on what you just said a few minutes ago, and you said it very respectful of the way that I would say it, and you used that word that people throw around now so loosely, and it really bothers me, and that word is haunchy. You know, when you mention Mr. Bowles, he is a haunchy. He is someone that not only deserves that recognition, he has earned that recognition, but when you say that. So how do you feel today about these people who are walking around calling themselves haunchy or Sokies? It bothers me that seeing that they study Korean martial arts, but they call themselves haunchies. And they wear red.
Yeah, it's. it's
but that's another story. We'll be talking about that later. But why do you feel about that? Doesn't it bother you a little bit?
Yeah, it does, because you know, it's just like seeing a 7, 8 year, 9 year old black belt. You know, it follows the same lines. You know, like they can be the black belt, but are they actually going to be able to defend themselves against an adult or somebody that's a lot bigger than they are? You know, you go through the moves and all that kind of stuff, but is it practical to say that they are that rank?
They don't have the maturity of the technique and the. And the other thing, too, is that, and we talked about this specifically, and it's kind of fanatic about it. I mean, if you teach karate, though, and you say you teach karate, not martial arts, anybody can teach martial arts, God bless them. But if you say you teach karate, though, and you don't teach Kihan, Kata, Bunkai, and Kumite, you're not teaching karate, though. If you change
right.
it, you rearrange it, you do it because your ego, you say, well, I'm going to do it because no one's looking at me, I'm going to change it. You're not teaching karate, though. You got to do those four. And on my shows in the past, I've been very explicit and brought it down in detail so people understand the American terminology, which is Kihan, which is just everything basic. Kata is pre-rage movements. Bunkai is self-defense. Kumite is fighting. So, but people forget about the tradition. You know, every now and then, Daniel, I have to go, and I love YouTube. It's so educational for me. But I'll just type in traditional karate do, and all kinds of stuff comes up. So I love doing that to refresh my mind, to rejuvenate myself, because I'm surrounded by all this gunk. You know?
Yeah.
Now, you still compete. When was the last time you competed?
Last time I competed was last summer.
Last summer.
Was the last time.
Now, are you going to compete at the Nationals this year, or are you just going to wait and do Kata Wars with me? With mine?
No, I'm going to wait and do yours, because I had actually retired right before that tournament.
My I brought you out of retirement?
Yes, you did.
God bless. God bless you. God bless you. Well, let's talk about competition a little bit. What did you like to do best? Fighting, kata, or weapons, or kabuto? Which one did you like best?
I can say I really like doing the weapons. You know, they're the extension of your hand.
What is your weapon that you did? What is the weapon that you did?
My preferred weapon was the kamas.
Plus. Now, did you do like my teammate did, Butch Tokusala? Did you flip them and turn around your neck, or did you just do basic kata?
No, to me, I don't do that. You know,
it's a diversion. A lot of people think it's a diversion.
Now, what I want the judges to see and the people that are watching to see is the actual attackers that I'm defending against.
Right. You actually want to show the bunkai at the application of the kata, even though you're doing weapons. Absolutely.
Exactly.
I understand completely. Yeah. We're in the same mode, just different level. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. Now, what was your major championship that you won with your weapons kata? What was your major championship, the one that you really enjoyed winning, your biggest win?
The biggest one is when I beat Alfredo Bustamante.
Oh, great guy. What show to come and nine trades of Shitoru. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get him to do Kata. You know, he grew up with my son, and I haven't talked to him about a year, but he definitely, he's invited without a doubt. Now, he's, you know, he was tough to win. He's tough to beat. I in fact, you know, all the times that I remember seeing him compete about 2 years straight, I never seen him lose in Kata.
Yeah.
He's
a very tough guy to beat.
So that's a compliment win. Now, did you fight too?
I did, and then I quit fighting because a lot of times my back, my knees just won't take it after I run my katas.
Right.
But the last time I did fight, I actually did win the Triple Crown, took first weapons, katas, and fighting. And then I said, okay, I don't have to fight anymore. I'm just going to stick to doing the weapons and the katas.
Now, you had some good wars with a good friend of mine that I had some wars with, which is Steve Perry.
Oh, yeah, every other Monday night.
Let's plug him a little bit, because Steve was a great kata guy, but he was an incredible fighter, too. Now, he was actually on the, wasn't he on the Budweiser team with Richard Plowden and those guys?
Yes.
That's right. He had to be pretty darn good to be on the Budweiser team. That's Billy Blanks, and I mean, that was a group of guys, man. They were pretty tough. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you fought him every Monday night? He must have rubbed off on you a little bit, huh?
Oh, yeah. Little story about him and I is he caught me with a full power side kick on the wall. I had no place to go. I took the whole kick and bruised 3 ribs and pulled all the muscles on my left side. I was out for a year and a half. I wore 2 different rib braces. Finally came back, made green belt, and who did I draw to fight? Mr. Perry. I was in the exact same spot on that side of the wall. I saw a little grin on his face. He started to lift that leg, and I scissored him, took him down, and heel kicked him to the groin, and he just laid there and laughed and looked at me and said, "You learned." I said, "Yes, I did."
I've got a good Steve Perry story, and I haven't shared it with you when we did the pre-interview. It was the Fort Worth Pro-Am back in, I think it was 82 or 83, and Mr. Blanks beat me bad. In fact, before I fought Mr. Perry, I told everybody there's no way he was going to do that cartwheel kick and hit me with it. Of course, I got knocked out by Billy Blanks with that cartwheel kick. But I had to fight for the second third against Mr. Perry, who beat me too. So I lost to Mr. Blanks and Mr. Perry that day, back to back. But, you know, the neat thing I liked about Steve was that he was an incredible kata man. And back then, if you were really incredible in kata, normally you're a pretty good fighter. It wasn't like today where you're just good in kata and you didn't fight, you know, or you just fought and you didn't do kata, you know.
Yeah.
Guys like Steve Perry were gifted, you know, so they could do both. Well, that's cool. I love talking about Steve. Now, your kata that you run, which is the kata that you run?
Empty hand, I run Gopaisho. And weapons, I run Kanagawa no Kamadai. And Gopaisho.
Gopaisho, that kata, I remember when it was introduced in the 90s in the NBL and NASCAR. I call it the video kata because it was one of the few katas like Basai, that were copycatted by video by a lot of these youngsters, and they would copycat it, but they didn't actually do the kata. They just copy it by video, and they'd get out there and you can't fake real kata. That's what I'm trying to say, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So, you won a lot with that form.
Oh yeah. I actually learned that form at the World Championships in Chicago in 86 out in the hallway. And I've been running it ever since. and I've won it at every level. 86.
Okay, well, was 85 they were in Houston? Was 86 where was it?
Chicago.
Okay. So you didn't go to Houston?
No.
Okay, because we would have met, because I was hanging out, God rest in peace, Frank Ruiz and a bunch of the guys, and that was the last time I saw Master Trias. He was majestic,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yes, he was. I actually was lucky enough that when I had first started, I took a seminar with him when he came to Fort Wayne, and he gave me my very first trophy.
Wow.
Which I actually wrote a college.
You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, I put him in that category like Mr. Norris, and not because of who they are, but the aurora, the gift that they had to help change people's lives. Just the vision that he had to create the USKA, to create people like John Keenan, who turned out to be Count Dante, Victor Moore, who was one of the most controversial fighters that we ever had, beat everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, but got a bad break because he was a different color of skin. You know, I talk a lot about that with Victor over the phone, and, you know, he's really prejudiced. He couldn't buy a point. He was so gifted. Victor Moore was a good fighter. I've heard a lot about Victor Moore, but that came from Robert Trias, Master Trias.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The other person that was really great with Master Trias that I got to meet him twice, and I really enjoyed it. His name was Artis Simmons. Do you remember him?
Yes, I'm familiar with the name. I never really got to meet him, but I am
great
familiar
guy.
With the name.
How about another guy I'm going to hit you with that really, really is an incredible man, too. I get to hang out with him in his basement because we got snowed in. Jimmy Jones from Chicago. He was one of Mr. Trias's right-hand guys.
Yeah.
Jimmy Jones. He's the one that promoted Ken Knutson, who was one of my original history generals. So it's cool talking about the USK history. Let me ask you another question about USK. How tough was the overall organization? I mean, in other words, could you do like they do today in an open tournament where you just come in, wear any color your uniform you want, drop your weapon, and then enter the tournament and not be talked to? Would a USK tournament back in the 70s allow that, you think?
No, we wore all white geese, no color geese, nothing like that. If you dropped a weapon, you might as well say you were done. That was unacceptable, and USKA people were always judged tougher because that's the way Grandmaster Trias wanted it. He goes, you're USKA, you don't get a free ride. You go out there, and we're going to judge you harder. And they did. And that's why they had such good people there.
The other thing, too, is I know because I live both worlds. I live the open tournament, and I live the traditional tournament, like the USK events. And a lot of the open guys, they didn't want to enter USK events because it was the toughest competition. You know, and then you're not talking about two or three or four competitors. I mean, there'd be 15, 20, sometimes 30 competitors. So
Yeah. If
you took a third place or fourth place, you did pretty darn good, you know. I mean, I remember a lot of my third places, you know, and the people that were incredible, I feel, that won kata or won fighting. They were just way ahead of the time. I mean, I just enjoyed being around that group at that time period. Now, back in the day, Mr. Trias put together something that was really interesting. It was called the Robert Trias International Society. Do you know about that at all?
Yeah, we have three members that I came up with. Honchy Bowles, Mrs. Bowles, and Steve Perry. They were all Trias Internationals.
Well, you know, I've got to tell the story. I always love telling the story. I created, in fact, you're getting it this year. You're getting one of these awards. Hachi Jesse not Jesse, I'm sorry, Hachi Philip Bradley from England is an incredible artist. And his style is called Hachisakura Okinawa White Crane. It's a beautiful style. But I called him up and asked him, I had this vision one night about these two dragons. And one dragon would be very passionate, very loving, very kind, gentle, understanding. But the other dragon was very fierce, a warrior, no nonsense, directly to the point. And if these two dragons faced each other, it became the Dragon Image Fighting Award. Well, the very first person that got it was Parker Shelton. And Parker Shelton was my dear friend. And we lost him to the Big C a few years back. And I promised him when I gave him that first award that anybody that would receive that award would deserve it. So I'm very honored that you're going to get that this year at the Living Legends. But the Dragon Image Fighting Award came from him. And then, you know, guess what? He called me. He says, I have something in the mail for you that I'm going to send you. And he sent me my Trius International patch. So
nice.
I wear it very, very, very proudly. I have, you know, my USK patch. I still have. My old uniform, my old black uniform, it looks white, and I treasure the USK memories, and it's real special talking to you. It really is.
Yeah. I treasure them also.
Now you have something that we talked about that you kind of made Mr. Roy Curran, myself, Bill Wallace, all these guys. You made us all drool in Oklahoma. At the event that we did in Durant, Oklahoma, you brought with you the original pinnacle that Master Robert Trius put together. Tell me a little bit about that book, why we were drooling.
Besides, it's very valuable. That is our whole complete system written out.
The pictures were incredible. I remember seeing Mr. Kirby's eyes as he turned the pages and he saw those incredible pictures that a lot of people hadn't seen, you know. It's going to be featured this next week at the USK Alliance Nationals. You're going to be there in Houston at the West Chase Marriott, and I'll be having my booth there and stuff, and you're going to actually have the books there so people can actually come by the booth and actually look at that book. And you'll be able to tell people about what's going on. Also, we've been talking about the things that will be happening. But you're going to be there as a judge, though, this next week.
And I'll be running a weapons kata.
Oh, good. Cool. Well, that's great. I get to see you perform. You know, I think that Ms. Davis and Buster Cotton are doing a great job. Because they've taken on a lot of responsibility. When they lost Mr. Hawks, James Hawks, that was tough. But then they lost Mr. Jordan, and that was the two guys that really had put the Alliance together. And it's really incredible what they've done. I think pre-registration, they probably got over 500 people. So I'm glad to see traditional karate is still alive and well, you know?
Yeah, it's nice, you know, because I like the discipline. When you have the traditional stuff, you have the discipline, you have the respect. You know, I've been to a lot of tournaments and, you know, observed a lot of different places where the students just don't show the respect to the black belts that they deserve. You know, they turn their backs on them. They don't bow to them, you know, things like that.
You know my biggest peeve recently, Daniel? Let me ask you a question. If you were in the say the Grand Championship and you had five guys there and you all were first place winners, okay, so all you guys are going to the side, y'all won your division, you're going for grand, and they're calling out the scores and you stepped out front, but they're not finished calling the scores out, but you know you lost because the scores are lower than the other guy. So you just step back before the other guy, before they finish calling the scores. I know that sounds a little, that it doesn't matter to a lot of people, but that drives me nuts. It shows so much disrespect to the judges to not let them finish calling the scores out, whether you lost or not, you know?
Exactly.
I don't, that bothers me a lot. You know,
you're also disgracing your rank at that time. You know, you're supposed to be a black belt. You're supposed to be above the petty ego and all that kind of stuff. If they do that, you know, it's, you really don't have any use for them.
Hey, I got one for you. What about the part where they're bowing in, they're in rip position, then they get out of rip position to fix their uniform for a minute, go back to rip position, and right before their music stops or whatever, they go through the audience and they raise their hand up like, come on, cheer for me. Cheer for me. I'm ready. And go back to rip position. Or even in the middle of the kata, they'll stop and they'll look at the crowd and put their hand out and say, cheer for me. You know, I mean, it's turning to an entertainment view instead of kata and the bunkai application of pure self-defense. That's okay for that group, but
that is
you don't cut the people. It drives us crazy. So
yes, that is when the center judge, you know, should stop and say, "Can you demonstrate the bunkai on that?"
Whoa, that was mandatory in USK tournaments. If you didn't have a uki present ready, if they stopped you and said you must show the bunkai of that particular kata, and you couldn't perform the bunkai of the kata, whether you could or not, you were fake. You had to know your bunkai. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was something that they was really incredible. But today people look at you like you're nuts, and people think bunkai is like sushi. They don't even know what it means. You know, they have no conception at all. But, you know, like I said, you'll never go back to that way except for the traditional kata tournaments. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed about kata wars that I think that you're going to find interesting is that we don't judge you by 9.9.99 or 9.98. We don't do that. Judge Roy Kerbin, who created the Fort Worth Pro-Am, helped me devise a set of rules. It's really cool. It puts you under a microscope. Literally, five judges, one judge just watches your upper body, hands, techniques. There's no more sticking your little finger out and throwing a fist. One judge watches your lower body, your kicks, your hips, your chambers and so forth, or your kicks. One judge watches your application, theatrical presence, or your bunkai application of your kata. And then one judge watches if you just step out of the ring. That drives the kung fu guys crazy, but I don't care. They got to stay within the ring. And then the fifth judge is really important. Mandatory judge is that he watches the technical karate. So you can be the most dynamic weapons, musical, gymnastic, gifted dancer in the group. But if you don't have good technical karate do, by what you do, you won't get a high technical score. And you won't win kata wars because there's only one first place in the pro division, and you have to have 100 first places just to be invited. So, you know, yeah, there's a little stipulations there, but it's really fun because those guys that last year we had 27 competitors all had won first places 100 times or more, and their egos are, you know, literally out the door, and they know they're the best. It's just fun to watch that type of performances, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And then this year with the traditional kata tournament, they have the traditional guys who do the separate Okinawa and Japanese divisions, taking their first places, separating the different styles of Okinawa and Japanese karate, forming a grand, and then taking that grand and going against the open grand. That's never been done before. Just the opportunity to do that is pretty cool. So
yeah.
I'm glad you're going to be a part of it. I'm excited that you're going to be a part of it. Really am.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, listen, I'm going to take a short break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to play the Legends name game, and that's where I'm going to shoot some names at you, some old names, maybe some names that that you might be surprised I'm going to shoot at you. And you just tell me what you feel about them, how they either influenced you or they were part of your life, maybe in a movie or maybe in karate. Maybe you don't know them. If you don't, well, say so. If you do, just tell me about them. Okay? We'll play the Legends game when we come back. Cool.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be right back with Daniel Gossett. Hey, guys, I'm talking to Daniel Gossett from the old USKA days, who is one of the top competitors in weapons. He'll be competing next week at the USKA Grand Nationals in Houston, Texas, at the beautiful West Chase Marriott in Houston, Texas. You know, I've got a couple of announcements I want to make. I've got the Wawa West Tournament that's coming up in Abilene, Texas. It's put on none other by Mr. Larry Fields, one of the top AOK promoters. And he's going to have it at the Abilene Convention Center. This is a breaking championship, but he's got something really cool. He's going to be giving away a Colt 45 replica to the team that gets the most points for the tournament for overall performances. Plus, he's going to buy that team pizza. How cool is that? This is the Abilene Convention Center, the Wild West Tournament. For more information, go to AOKstrong.com, and you can see all the incredible AOK events coming up this year. The AOK is the Texas circuit that helps a lot with kids. It's a big kid advocate tournament circuit. The president, D.E. Chambers, will be coming on later on in the year. Also coming up is an incredible event that I've been a part of for 11 years. Coming up on this 11th year on May 24th to 25th is Jam All Nationals, promoted by Donway Petway. There'll be over $10,000 in awards and prizes. This is the road to the go, ladies and gentlemen. Again, at the Marriott West Chase, the same place the USK Nationals will be. It's an incredible location, five-star hotel. For more information, contact Donway Petway on Facebook, or go to jamallnationals.com. And that's jamallnationals.com, and you get your registration there. You know, I had a really enjoyable conversation the other night. Went 2 hours, 2 hours on the phone talking to this gentleman, and his name is Mr. Fred Buck. And Mr. Fred Buck is part of the Kyokushinkai history in America. His father, Donald Buck, was a direct descendant of Kyokushin and directly chosen by Matsuyama to head the American Kyokushin organization in America. And Donald Buck ran it for years. Rest in peace. But his son, Fred Buck, is taking it over, and he will be at the Las Vegas event that we're doing for John Natividad at Sam's Town Casino, and we'll be honoring his dad, Donald Buck, with the Kyokushin Dragon Image Fighting Award in honor of Donald Buck. Five Kyokushinkai fighters will be awarded this prestigious award at the John Natividad Roast at Samstown, November 1st and 2nd, and to honor the Kyokushin legacy. And to this day, of all the karate styles that are out there, Kyokushin is being the strongest karate system in the world. And a lot of it goes, of course, to Matsuyama and his vision of creating that particular karate style. So hats off and much deep bow to Donald Buck and also to his son, who will honor in the memory of his dad and also honor Kyokushin in America. That'll be coming up November 1st and 2nd. Well, you know, we have a great segment here that we've had for quite a while, and I bring on my student and one of the people I enjoy talking to the most, Mr. Dean Piles. Dean, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
How are you tonight? Are you getting over your
cold?
Doing
good, sir. Doing what?
You getting over your cold? You getting over your cold?
Yes, sir, I am. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that's working out for you. Now, you're getting ready for a big tournament. You're going to, was it Christine's tournament coming up?
Yes, sir.
And you're gonna be where you're gonna be entering in there.
I try to keep that a secret, but you know, it's already out there. So that's okay.
And I got a big mouth. You know that.
That's
okay. Everybody, everything. Yeah.
That's
hey,
okay.
Well, you know,
they know it's coming.
I just want to keep up with you. You know, I get to talk to you every now and then, but you know, weekly is pretty cool. Tonight's subject is pretty cool. This is something that's been on my mind a long time, and sit back and then I'm going to get your opinion on it. And here we go. It's a journey of the red belt. You know, Taekwondo, God bless Taekwondo, the Korean form of martial art, you know, first Q level. Is that what a red belt is, or is it a Hanchi Grandmaster status? Come on, seriously, it's one or the other. Which one is it? You know, I remember the first time I saw the masses of red belts at a tournament. It was in Ohio. It was the early 70s, I believe. And I remember it well because it floored me. It knocked me down. Like every other traditional Japanese karate guy, I was brought up knowing that the red belt represented Hanchi, grandmaster status. And only the elite was allowed to wear that symbol. You know, it represented. So when I saw all these people wearing red belts, all ages, you know, all genders, I didn't know what to think. I really didn't. And then I noticed they were in the brown belt divisions. That's right. They were in the brown belt divisions. And they were Taekwondo and Shusuwan and other Korean ways of martial arts. They were wearing red belts now as far as a brown belt. You know, I didn't really still didn't understand. So I asked my seniors, and this is what I was informed, that the Koreans and the Japanese never really got along in the martial arts. And somewhere in the political mess, I guess, the Koreans believing the biggest insult would make their brown belt level candidates wear red belts until they test for black belt level. You know, and while red belt still to this day is the highest color belt level in the Japanese martial arts, so that is why you see at all tournaments, all ages, all genders, so-called grand masters wearing a red belt. You know, there isn't a samurai apprentice red and white belt that's given to a samurai apprentice before you become a Hanchi. You know, however, but you would never see a Korean martial artist wear that unless they, I guess they just didn't know the martial arts history. But I've seen that. I've seen a gentleman wear a black belt, and that would be a red belt, but he have Korean kanji on the red belt, and he'd be Taekwondo. So I guess some people just don't know the history. You know, next time you're around a Korean martial artist, Wolverine, ask them why Korean styles wear red belts before black belt level, and why karate styles wear brown belts before black belt. That's my peep tonight. I think the general public, no, I know the general public is confused. What do you think, Wolverine?
Oh yeah, of course they're confused. But you know, the problem is now look how long Taekwondo's been around. So, you know, they have a hold.
They don't care.
Right.
They don't
right.
care.
Right. So they don't care. Yeah. So, but you know, in most of their defense, you know, it was when the Japanese invaded Korea, you know, that's one of the reasons that they kind of, you know, give them, you know, the proverbial bird by switching the color belts around, you know, just as a
get back. I don't know that
deep history.
All I know is that I saw people wear red belts, and it floored me when I saw that because I didn't understand. And it took Uncle Sid, rest in peace, Sid Campbell, to sit me down and explain to me, you know, the deepness of the politics involved. And I understand cultures, how they don't like each other, Japanese, Korean,
right,
whatever. And but you know, the people today who do martial arts, they go to a tournament, they see a child or a young person wearing a red belt, and then they see this so-called master wearing the red belt. They gotta wonder why. Why would we wearing the same color belt?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I'd rather see somebody wearing a red belt than some of these people that are wearing black belts. Because some of them, that's where my questions are. That's where my questions are, is how did that take place? How did that happen?
Well, how about this? How about this, Wolverine? I'm going to take you back before you were born, probably, because I know you're 50 years old, but I'm going to just take you back a little bit. We used to have dye parties. You couldn't
buy
belts. And after a person would test, there would be no money involved. He'd have to pass. And if he did pass, we'd go to our person's house, have spaghetti or a barbecue, and we'd boil dye, the boiling dye, and we'd dye a white belt to green and a green to brown, and that's how the person would get their belt color. And then the black belt that they would test for black belt, it was a pass-me-down black belt from that instructor. What happened was the Koreans basically came over to America and they said, look, we're gonna promote martial arts and it's gonna be Taekwondo. But the Americans didn't know what Taekwondo was. They'd heard about karate and judo and jiu-jitsu, but they didn't know what Taekwondo was. So the Koreans had to sell that Taekwondo was karate.
Right. And Grandmaster Jun Ri did a great job with that. I mean,
you know,
Grandmaster Jun Ri did a great job with it. And you know, with the help of Jeff Smith and, you know, J. Pat Burleson.
Now it's one. That's right. Now
right,
it's one. Now
right.
You mentioned Taekwondo with karate is karate. It's the same thing, but the beginning roots of it, it wasn't. So, you know,
right.
As long as you understand how it started, what it is now, we deal with it. But it's important that the history is told and then people know the beginning part.
And that's why the History Museum is important. And, you know, I think that's a good question for Mako, for people to ask that, because that's a good question that can really be built upon in the game as well.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that. We're up to, I think it was 36 questions now, and we started with 15, and imagine when we get 3,000 questions answered.
Right.
That's going to be really cool for the average person. And we got questions from who is Chuck Norris? What is judo? What is a white belt? I mean, simple questions to
right.
the intricate questions. So
right.
that's another story, another time. Main thing is that people need to understand that if a person wears a red belt, that the history behind it. One is a Korean method, and one is a Japanese method in the two
right.
worlds.
Well,
and
what we do is they wear, when they get to that rank, they wear a gray belt because they're doing the Shotokan and the Taekwondo, then they'll wear a gray belt. So that way they're not stepping on anybody.
Well, you know what? Maybe we ought to make a polka dot belt. Or how about a yellow
yeah.
striped giraffe belt? Or how about
we could make
a Cracker
one
Jack
like
belt?
Rainbow
well,
color.
You know, hey, they have. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen guys with stripes. And see, that's the other thing. Who is in the stripes? Well, I don't understand the stripe thing, you know? One of the things I ran into one time was a guy walked up to me, asked me who I was, and I looked at him because I asked him who he was because he had six stripes on one side and seven stripes on the other. That would make him a 13th degree black belt.
Well,
he couldn't
yeah.
explain that. He just thought that the extra
not.
Stripe was a and you know what? It's okay. I come to find out he was a ninja. So that explained everything.
Oh. Well, that
yes.
explained
yes.
it.
Well, ninjas become
ninja.
13th and 14th and 15th degree black belts. So that explained
right.
everything. So I went about my business. But hey,
right.
thanks for talking about the red belt status tonight. And
you're
again,
welcome, sir.
Stirring up the can of worms that the Wolverine and Professor do every week on this segment. This has really been a lot of fun. And, you know, for anybody that's listening that wants to talk about a subject that wants the Wolverine or Professor Lee to talk about, send us an email. And that's ProfessorGaryLee@gmail.com. And we'll consider that subject. And it can be about any subject that deals with martial arts. We're not shy, are we, Wolverine?
No, we're not shy a bit. We'll put it out there.
Well,
toes
just,
may get stepped on, feelings may get hurt, you know. But I mean, it's all in promoting martial arts and keeping the history alive and keeping what is what.
It's just education. That's all, you know. And,
right.
It's just really strange that today in 2019. That we have to deal with the fact that we have to explain what a red belt is. You know, we have to explain
right.
what a black belt is. It's just a different thing. It's just a different thing. But that's another subject.
Well, that's because a lot of
Wolverine.
People have. Yeah. That's
sir?
Just because a lot of people have just made a mockery out of martial arts in general, you know, just for money purposes.
Well, we're educating. That's what we're about, okay? So God bless you, Wolverine.
Right.
We'll talk to you next week.
You too, sir.
And
yes,
we'll talk
sir.
To you real soon, okay? Thank you so much. God bless you, buddy.
Yes, sir.
That was Dean Piles Kicking with the Wolverine, talking about a controversial subject, the red belt. And, you know, that's what the show's about. We talk about subjects that people think about, but maybe they don't want to talk about. But we're not shy about talking about those subjects. So, you know, we have a vision that's different than most people on this show, and that is to protect the history one warrior at a time. That really means that it doesn't really matter if you're a on a magazine or you're in a commercial or, you know, you think you're a star. We don't care about that. We just want your history. We just want to be able to verify sport karate history in America. It's only 60 years old. And the people that created it in the 50s and 60s, who brought it over from Korea and Japan and China and Okinawa, they had a dream to bring it to America. And it branched out and it created what we have now. In 2020, we'll be introducing it into the Olympic Games. Now, sadly, the reigning group, the WKF, I understand has backed out. So in 2024, I think skateboarding won over karate. So that's sad because I wanted the world to see kata. I think the world would be mesmerized by kata. Not because, most of you know, I'm a kata fanatic, but they'd seen the fighting from Taekwondo's perspective in the 80s, and they were fixing to see sweep, takedown, punch, different types of power techniques that they didn't see in Taekwondo with the kumite fighting. But they'd never seen kata before, the prearranged movement that is beautifully done and synchronized. And if they allowed bunkai to be applied and the application of showing how that beautiful kata can be applied in a real self-defense situation, I really believe the world would be mesmerized by it. I'm going to keep praying that someone will wake up on the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, and allow traditional kata to bloom and blossom within the world of the Olympics. Well, I'm going to bring back my special guest, Mr. Daniel Gossett. Daniel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Super. Appreciate it. Let me take a little break here. We're going to play the Legends Name Game now. This is something I created with Bob White, the very first interview I did 3 years ago. I throw a name at you, and sometimes I know a little history about that person, but you tell me about your history or how that person influenced you. If you don't know that person, fine, we'll go on to another person. You ready to play?
Yes, sir.
Okay, first one, Juan Galvan. You got 2 minutes.
Master Juan.
Boom.
Master Juan, I introduced myself. I saw he had a Hall of Fame patch on, and I asked him if he knew my instructor. He said, yes, he did. He invited me over to a school to do a kids' seminar, and I've been with him off and on since then. That's been about 10 years now. Real nice
great
guy. He's a yes.
Good fighter. Good. And let's throw his son in now. Adrian Galvan. Tell me about Adrian.
Adrian, met him. Don't like to fight him. Very, very tough. Nice guy. And like I said, very tough fighter.
And him and my son grew up together. Yeah, he's got incredible technique. And he is training to try to represent America, I believe, in the Olympics. Right? He's training in Colorado.
Yes. Yes, he is.
You know, we talked about Robert Bowles. We talked about Mr. Petrius. Throw me a name that I'm not going to throw at you. You tell me a name, someone that impressed you back in the old USK days. So give me a name that someone that I might know, but someone that you thought of that impressed you back in those days. It can be anybody.
Hanchi Pachivas.
Amazing. Good. He was a good kata. He didn't do weapons. Phil Coppell did. Coppell did weapons. Pachivas did weapons, or he just did kata?
No, he did weapons also. Matter of fact, I'm looking at a picture of him right now. He's got a commas in his hands.
Us. Now, what made him stand out? What made him special?
what made him special is I took a seminar with him. We were fighting blindfold, and he stopped me twice to ask what the rank I was. And he did not like that rank, and he's the one that made to my showdown.
Yes.
And I got my showdown, and I sent him a letter telling him that I had received it, and 2 weeks later he died.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, so it was a little bittersweet, but... Yeah, he's the one that pushed to get me to showdown.
Do you remember a fighter? They called him Flim Flam. His name was Dean Evans.
Yeah, I remember the name. That's way back.
He was
back
the number one
days.
USK fighter. He was the number one USK fighter in 71 or 72. Flim Evans. And they called him, his name is Dean Evans. He's a pretty good friend of mine, and he was a definitely USK animal. Remember Curtis Harrington?
No.
He ran USK events in Ohio, and now you were out of Indiana, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, we talked about him earlier? Did you get to fight Parker at all?
He was in Fort Wayne also. Matter of fact, had a choice between his school and Honchy Bowl's school, and I chose Honchy Bowl's school, and I've been with him ever since. I met him quite a few times. And, you know, there's things that happened there that, you know, I'm not going to get into, but, you know, I never had anything bad about him, you know, personally. But,
I know there's deep history between the people we're talking about, and I like talking about positive things, so let me share this with you. Let me tell you what positive is. I'm fighting at Curtis Harrington's tournament, and I'm disqualified for stomping a guy. I'm literally disqualified. I'm fuming. I'm fuming at the mouth. I leave the gym, and I go into the men's bathroom, and I don't push the door open. I slam it. And on the other end of the door was Flim Evans, Dean Evans. And he had a cigarette in his mouth. And I knocked the cigarette out of his mouth. And he said, "Hey, kid, what's wrong?" I said, "I just blankety blank blank just got disqualified." And Jerry Durant did it. I said, Jerry Durant disqualified him. He said, "Look, kid, there'll be another day, another tournament. Settle down a little bit. My friend's fixing a good fight. Let's go out and watch him." So I go out, not knowing who Dean Evans is. I go out in the bleachers with his black belt. And I'm sitting in the bleachers, and he's looking around and saying, "Oh, yeah, there's my friend now." And he points at Parker Shelton. And Parker lines up, and the first fight he's fighting this Korean gentleman. And he's got this coach who's Korean also. And first thing Mr. Shelton does is, grabs him with a left hand, reach hands him, punches him, sweeps him, stomps him, punches him again. He gets a warning for excessive contact. Mr. Parker does it again. This time the reach hand hits him in the nose, and blood went everywhere. And if you remember back then, blood wasn't disqualification. They just had arbitration, right?
Right.
And
yep.
The arbitrations, sometimes the arbitrations would go on for 30 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So finally comes back and he tells Mr. Shelton, "Okay, we're not going to disqualify you. You got a warning. Next time you do that again, you're going to be disqualified." They stiff up. They put cotton up this Korean guy's nose, and they give a warning to Mr. Shelton. I'm telling you, if he does it one more time, he's going to be thrown out. Well, Dean, Mr. Evans, hits me with an elbow and says, "Watch what my friend does." And of course, Mr. Shelton, as soon as he bowed in, he grabbed him, swept him, reached hand him in the same exact place, the nose, swept him, stomped him, and he was disqualified. And I think Ed Daniels won that tournament that night, or Everett Eddy. I can't remember who won it, but, man, it was a great tournament. And that's where I met Dean Evans, and that's how I met Parker Shelton. And, you know, those guys, were a different breed because they were the pioneers that created sport karate as we know it today. People today
yes.
just have no idea of the lineage where they came from and how it was started. Let me ask you a question as we toward the end of the show here. You know, you've met me now and you've talked to me and we've become friends, but I'm going to ask you not a personal question. It's a personal question to you. How important is the sport karate history keeping it taught so that new generation understands where it came from? Is it not important? If I've just been wasting these 20 years, I mean, how important is it for that next generation to understand who a Robert Bowles is or a Robert Trias is or a Parker Shelton?
It's very important. You know, like you said, you know, these guys are the pioneers, the forerunners. Without them, we wouldn't be here to carry on what they taught. You know, like I said, I came from a very traditional school. Hachi Bowles, he came from Grandmaster Trias, very, very tradition, and I'm that way also. You know, I want to keep that alive. You know, you have to keep the history alive. If not, the sport gets diluted. And, you know, you have to have a tradition to keep it pure. You know,
let me say publicly, officially, tonight, you, Daniel Gossett, you're being inducted as a history general for the Sport Karate Museum September the 27th and 28th in Houston, Texas. And congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. It's very humble.
Well, you know, with people who are listening, they say, well, they're, you know, who follow, they go, well, okay, he's got another history general. Who cares? They don't understand. A history journal was created by Mike Stone, Alan Steen, Ken Knutson, Sid Campbell, Howard Jackson. I mean, incredible people. Michael DePasquale, Joe Corley. That's who created history journals. And if you're chosen to be a history journal, you have to do three qualifications. One and first and foremost qualification is that the Sport Karate Museum has to know 30 years of your history. They have to know everything about you for 30 years, Daniel. And
yes.
we've done our research. The second thing is, and this is very important, especially in today's age, it cannot be solicited. It cannot be said you have to pay so much money to become a history general. That's not ever going to happen. The third is that you must give something and donate something and autograph it so your memory will always be there in your mind that you gave something personal from your collection to be there for people to see. You know, it goes back to Master Junior's belt that he wore from Korea, gave to Alan Steen. Alan Steen wore it, gave it to Mr. Stone. He wore it. He gave it to Mr. Burleson. He wore it. He gave it to Mr. Harrison, and he wore it, and he gave it to me. That's the lineage of what we're doing at the Sport Karate Museum. So you being a history general, and becoming one this year, you fall in a list of incredible men and women who have really created this sport in America. And I'm very proud to do that for you. And I'd like to do Juan Gavin this year also. I hope he understands as what I've just shared with you. I'm sure you'll share it with him. You know, he's part of that too, that history.
Yes.
So it is a big deal if you do become a history general. It's not just something that... you know, I think I've got less than 250 of you animals that I've hand-chosen. And when it was created back in the day, when I was sitting with, you know, Uncle Sid and other people, you know, I was an airhead. I was competing. I didn't understand I would need guys like you 20 years from now. Now I do. Now I understand. Especially after our time we spent together in Oklahoma. We had fun sitting there and talking about that. That's what it was all about, sharing that history. And now, let me ask you a question. You're retired. Now, I've got you out of retirement. I imagine you're going to do Keep a Show for me, right? The Kata Wars. That's the Kata you're going to do. You're going to run a weapons Kata, too?
I'm going to run a weapons Kata.
Cool. Cool. Now, if someone came up to you and they were young and they said, okay, I've watched you perform. That's incredible. What could I do as a performer to enhance myself to be like you someday? What would you tell them?
What was always told to me, make the judges see your opponents. If they can see your opponents, then you've got it made. You have to visualize that person coming after you and what you're going to do to stop that person at that exact moment, let it go, then go on to the next person. If you can do that and people can actually come up to you afterwards and say, I can see what you were doing, then you, personally, I think that's where you have it made right there. And I would tell them, you know, that's your time. Go out, take your time, control your breathing, do your little meditation, and go all out after it. And when it's done, just let it go.
Do you remember the compliment that has stayed with you all these years after you perform and someone you respect comes up to you and asks you or tells you something? Do you remember what they said to you or who it was?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. From a completely different system, a guy came up to me and said, you really put on a show out there. He said, I can see from your very beginning that you see that person, you don't want to kill him, but you have to do it. You do it, and then you immediately let it go. You can see it in your face. You go on to the next person, and it starts all over again. It's just a wave after wave after wave of your emotions going through there. And that stuck with me, saying, you know, that I put on a show out there. But it's traditional, you know, it's not the flashy stuff, it's blood and guts.
You know, Uncle Sid used to tell me, tell the story. Just like telling a story. You have a beginning, you have the middle that grabs you, and then you have the dynamic ending. And the ending always goes back to the beginning, the fundamentals. So tell the story. And I remember when I would perform, you would hear that in all the people in the audience. You always hear someone say that, yell to me. That was like the trademark. Mr. Lee, tell the story, tell the story. And they remembers that. So that's a lot of things. They helped me become a better kata person. I always told the story. You know, one of the things too, and people ask, kata fanatics, and that's what you are, and that's what I am, kata fanatics. How do we perfect our perform? Well, you know, the only perfection in life is God Almighty. He's the only thing that's perfect. But in Japanese and Okinawan kata, people who perform real Japanese Okinawan kata, we think that we are perfect. And how do we do that? Well, one way I did it, I don't know how you do it, but one way is I break the kata down to five movements. Only five. I don't go six. I don't do four. Five movements from the very beginning to the number five. And I make those five movements apply through bunkai and application so it's perfect in my mind. And then I go to the next five and to the next five. So the kata has 60 moves or 100 moves in it. I do it by five increments. So by the time I get to the last part of the kata, every move has been perfected by fives. Does that make sense to you, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever trained like that before, or you do a different way?
When I go through my warm-ups, you know, I want to visualize everything that I'm going to do from the moment, you know, I'm at the corner of the ring to seeing the judges the very first time, stepping into the ring, my bow to my opening, everything in between. I'll do it slow so I can get the movements down, get the muscles memory back to where I want it to be. And then I'll go ahead and do it at a full speed and then stop
and then just visualize it and do your breath control and get ready to go out there.
You know, I'm gonna end it with this. You know, Mako, and rest in peace. He told me one time, and I'm gonna kind of do it like he told me. He just says, "Okay, guy, you know that only you have five judges." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "One judge looking at women. One judge don't care about you. He's looking at women. One judge, he's there because of ego. He don't care about you. One judge there because he's the uncle and brother of the man you're competing against. Center referee, he may like you. He may be honest. And then maybe one other judge might be honest. So out of five judges, three of them no good. So what do you do?" I said, "What do I do, Sensei?" You command the ring. You own the ring. You make them look at you. You make them understand that nobody like you. And you jack slap them. I said, "Sensei, I'm not going to jack slap the judges." He said, No. "You mentally jack slap them."
I said, "Yep." Yes, sir.
So that's what I did. Every time I performed, I may not have been the best guy out there. And I wasn't sometimes. But you knew I was authentic. And you knew what I did was real. And if the judge didn't like it, that's fine. But I did it the best of my ability. And I love kata. And I love talking to you because I know that you love kata. And I can't wait to see you perform next week. Thank you so much for being on my show tonight, Daniel. And
you're welcome.
Making me enjoy my memory of what I did 40 years ago. And I hope my listeners enjoyed it too.
I hope so, too. Thank you for the invite.
Well, I'll put this on your page, and we pot it, and you'll be able to pass it on to some of your friends. And I give my love and respect and deepest bow to Hanchi Bowles, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you next week, okay?
Yes, and I'll see Hanchi Bowles in May for the ISA seminar.
Super. All right, sir. God bless you. I'll talk to you soon. All right, Daniel?
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay, buddy. Right. Hey, everybody. Been talking to Daniel Gossett and talking about some history. This has been a really enjoyable show. We've covered a lot of information. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. And tonight, we always enjoy talking to the Wolverine and the information we're doing with him. Now, we've got some upcoming shows I'm going to plug real quick. Coming in on March the 26th, I'm going to Mr. Larry Fields, talking about the Texas Grand Slam Wild West Open. April 2nd will be Donnie Pettway talking about the Jamal Nationals. April 9th, the one and only Billy Sweeney, and talking about being a medic in the big karate tournaments around the country. We got Mr. Vasilis Pavov, who's the sculptor of all the samurai sculptures, who I'm introducing at this year in Las Vegas and in Houston. And then Mr. D. Chambers on April 30th, talking about the AOK and the growth of then. Then Mr. Rick Stanford. And today, I landed on May 14th, keep your fingers crossed, Mr. Toby Milroy. That's right, the business consultant for all these martial arts around the country. So some incredible shows coming up with the AMAA Masters Radio Show. Again, thank you for letting us be in your home tonight. Thank you for letting me ramble on. We want you to have a very safe week ahead. And all we say every week, mahalo. Aloha.